A lot of Unitarian Universalist ministers take a lot of time, especially when we're together, discussing our identity as a religious movement, even debating it. The question is usually something like this: what is our core, our theological center, our religious foundation? Does Unitarian Universalism even have a theological center? Some outside critics and observers do not think so. They say it's too inclusive. We're too open to new beliefs, stories, rituals, and practices to keep our own theological center. Some critics think that this tradition of ours isn't even a religion. I've even heard some UUs say they think this. On the contrary, I say, our tradition merely changes as we embrace new people and ideas, as we draw a wider circle of inclusion, wrestling with unfamiliar words or new perspectives. Time and again, this tradition of ours has embraced novel ways of expressing itself. Our spiritual home is always changing. This tradition is an embracing faith. To those who still say we're not religious, I want to ask this: if we are not a religion, when did we stop being one? Let's take a few glimpses from our history to see if we can spot that moment. In the late 1700s, an untrained Christian preacher named Hosea Ballou discovered and preached the good news of universal salvation, a message of divine love instead of a divine lottery of eternal damnation. A loving God, like a loving parent, would not bring forth human lives only to torment some of them forever. As a religious motivation, love is stronger than fear. Hosea Ballou established new churches on this faith, and he converted many existing congregations wholesale to this idea of universal salvation. In the late 1700s, that was the beginning of universalism in America. Or was it the beginning of the end? Was it a slippery slope from that point to non-religion? After great growth in numbers during the 19th century, universalism declined in size in North America. Maybe it was a victim of its own success, the success of its good news. As other mainstream, mainline denominations began to hold back on the hellfire and preach less judgment and more love, our message became less radical, less distinctive, less unique. But it remained a religious message. Love is stronger than fear. By the 1950s, less than 200 years after its emergence, Universalism had become much smaller as a denomination, and it merged with the Unitarians in 1961. And this is how we got such a long name. Now to the first half of that name, the Unitarian side of our heritage. You could make the case that it was Ralph Waldo Emerson who led the Unitarians out of the category of being a religion. Or you could say that he just blew up the common idea, exploded the common idea of what it means to be religious. The son of a Unitarian minister, Emerson became a minister himself in the 1830s. But in a few years, he left the ministry. He said it was too stale and limited and limiting. Along with his transcendentalist friends, he wrote and spoke about a spirituality beyond words and institutions. Transcendentalists like Emerson opened us to the wisdom to be found in religions other than Christianity and Judaism. Emerson wrote that a divine spirit weaves through the natural world and through every person. He said that this is a spirit to which we can open ourselves, whether or not we go to church. The most notable sermon in our heritage was Emerson's address to graduating students, the graduating class of the Divinity School at Harvard in 1838. Emerson dared to say to those new ministers that ministers should preach about real life, not about really old books. Preach life as you live it. The Harvard professors, most of them were Unitarian Christians, and they were outraged at such radical words. Reading copies of the sermon, many other Unitarian ministers, far and wide, worried that Emerson had gone too far. Even more, the conservative Orthodox ministers of those times took the opportunity to attack Unitarianism's credibility as a religion. The Orthodox called Emerson's words the latest form of infidelity, the foulest atheism. Given this controversy, you could say that if we lost our core identity, maybe it started with Emerson. Maybe he cut out our core and threw it away 170 years ago. But Unitarian Universalism is still here, and we are proud of Emerson. He had a major influence on American literature, philosophy, education, religion, and politics. Do you remember Congressman Dennis Kucinich? Do you remember that in 2007 he campaigned for the Democratic presidential nomination? Of course, Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama made short work of him in the primaries. But I remember hearing him in a public radio interview. Kucinich said that he was proud of his platform, proud of his populist economics, his plan for universal health care, and his pro-gay, pro-conservation, and anti-war positions. The interviewer challenged him. Do you think you can get enough money to attract the attention you need to be credible? In fact, Kucinich said, he had spoken to large crowds, enthusiastic crowds, when going around the country. All he needed was for the media to cover those events. But don't you need to make your message less liberal to gain popularity? The reporter went on. Don't your advisors tell you to soften your message? Kucinich said, well, one of my political advisors is Ralph Waldo Emerson. And in his essay, Self-Reliance, Emerson says, trust thyself. Every heart vibrates to that iron string. Trust thyself. Every heart vibrates to that iron string. Kucinich went on to say that he trusts his message and he trusts the values of the American people. He sees no reason to be someone that he is not. I still remember that listening to him brought tears to my eyes. If a politician who was not a UU can find in Emerson the inspiration to stand up and say what he believes, then I want to keep claiming Emerson as part of this religious movement as a religious movement. I don't think Emerson cut out our center. I think he deepened it. By the 20th century, some Unitarians were leading a movement called religious humanism. In 1933, many of our ministers signed on to the Humanist Manifesto. This document was published as a magazine ad. Today, it would just go viral on the internet, and it would get thousands of likes on Facebook. But it was in a magazine, and it spread far and wide. The Humanist Manifesto said that a religion need not have a supernatural basis. It called on religion to embrace reason and science and ethics. It said that humanism's view of human nature was an optimistic one. Humanism is confidence in our human potential for progress through education and science. Many of the traditional Unitarians resisted humanism. They argued that the core of Unitarian values came from a liberal reading of the Bible and the noble example of Jesus of Nazareth. the prophet, the human being. The older Unitarians feared that that humanism would cut out the Unitarian core. In the 20th century, we argued over the use of theistic language and metaphors in a denominational wrestling match that UU historians now call the humanist-theist controversy. Outside our congregations in the secular world, the humanist movement would become antagonistic toward religion in general. But inside our faith tradition, the word humanist came to be used as a term for an atheist or agnostic Unitarian Universalist. Did humanism take our center? Did it take our religious identity away from us? I don't think so. The humanist-theist controversy was a disagreement not about where or what our center was, but about where our boundaries were. How big shall we draw the circle to distinguish our faith? Or how narrowly? Whom shall we welcome inside the circle? Those were the real questions. Our circle has expanded again and again. This has not weakened the core of our faith. It has enriched it. Our UU circle widens its embrace, but the core of the religion remains firm and clear and strong. We are still a religious movement. And what is religion anyway? And how do you know when you've spotted one? I've heard a variety of definitions or opinions from people who claim to be religious and from those who say they're not. Sometimes their definitions have a judgmental tone about other people's religions or about religion in general. In the 19th century, some Western scholars of religion looked at indigenous tribal cultures and said those cultures had no religion at all. And that's because those scholars didn't see anything that looked like their idea of religion. By now, the concept of religion, by these days, the concept and the study of it are much more complicated, much richer, much broader. What I would say is that a religion is a set of beliefs or values and rituals or practices and institutional structures. In each religion, some of these elements are emphasized more than others. Every tradition has its own particular mix of beliefs or values, rituals or practices, and institutional structures. These components are interrelated and they carry one another along. Values, practices, and structures. So, in the area of practices or rituals, let's talk about ritual. In the words of one religious encyclopedia, ritual is a language for saying things which are felt to be true and important, but which are not easily put in words or in scientific terms. Ritual patterns convey depth of meaning which words may not express. We have rituals in this faith. The structure and elements of a worship service are an example of a ritual. In any tradition, if we left the lighting of the chalice out of the beginning of the service, a number of people would notice, and some people would say something. If we omitted the weekly offering, people would notice. They might not say anything. But they'd notice. Well, the ushers would say something, wouldn't you? And the treasurer, we know she would. Or imagine if we skipped the Christmas Eve candlelight service one year. We'd probably hear about it. Even if we announced it weeks in advance, some people would probably show up anyway, out of habit, out of ritual. Some rituals that we now embrace have come from the neo-pagan movement. The most recent phrase added to our denomination's list of the sources of our living tradition is this phrase: spiritual teachings of earth-centered traditions which celebrate the sacred circle of life and instruct us to live in harmony with the rhythms of nature. I was a delegate at the General Assembly in the 1990s where this change was originally proposed. That's our UU family gathering. And at that assembly, in small groups and large meetings, this proposed addition was wrestled over and celebrated. It was revised and wordsmithed. Debate centered on whether it would just be going too far. Would we lose our identity? After all, the world outside our walls didn't have good associations with that word, pagan. Many of our own folks didn't understand it yet. Weren't the other sources on the list already broad enough to include earth-centered spirituality? Can't we just accept paganism without an explicit reference? Those were the kinds of questions that came up. I was at the final days of debate and the final vote on this edition. It was a multi-year process. And at that final vote, before the vote, I heard expressions of hope and concern, heartfelt words, both pro and con. What swayed my vote was hearing passionate people witnessing to their participation as Unitarian Universalists and to their spiritual identities as neo-pagans or Native Americans or members of other indigenous traditions or as modern-day nature mystics like Emerson and the Transcendentalists. I decided that I could not cast a vote that would say, "You don't belong here. You don't fit." The vote was relatively close, not overwhelming, but that addition was approved. The change did pass. And that was 1995, and now, nearly 20 years later, it seems like no big deal. Like all the other pivotal moments in our heritage, this change was not a foregone conclusion. It did not come easily or without confusion, anxiety, hurtful words, apologies, and forgiveness, and then moving forward together. When people in any religious community have strong disagreements with one another about their community's rituals, beliefs, values, or structures, they are validating that it has a religious identity. UUs have always disagreed about aspects of our identity. Identity matters to us, even if we don't agree on what it is. Such disagreements have taken place within other religions, most of the world's religions. Disputes have turned into splits, provoked reformations, and generated new schools of thought and practice. Some denominations divide over their disagreements, or controversies can lead to the creation of new movements or new denominations. But in our heritage, in my understanding of it, when Unitarian Universalists have brought an unfamiliar perspective or practice into our circle, there's been discomfort and sometimes controversy, but no division. We wrestle over the boundaries of our faith. We have wrestled over Christianity, Transcendentalism, humanism, Buddhism, and neo-paganism, and a recent resurgence of liberal theism. These paths have mingled and joined on our religious pathway in our faith communities, but not without some struggle. We may at first resist the claim of an unfamiliar approach to be included, and then eventually we may end up including it. But we don't split off into new denominations. We make room in this one. We make room. So what is the center of this one, of this UU faith? As a movement, we no longer have one theology, if we ever did. Nevertheless, we do have a religious center. You may have your own way of describing it, your own favorite example or phrasing for what to you is our religious center. I hope you do, and if you don't yet, I hope you think about it and talk with one another. But here's my take. At the center of our tradition is a faith in the interdependent individual. This is the core for me, from which our aspirations and our actions flow. It's the starting point of our faith, not our boundary. The circle of our tradition is not so rigid that it will not embrace people with new ideas and beliefs. But the starting place is the interdependent individual. Every person is unique and unrepeatable, with dignity and worth. Each one has a measure of freedom, or should have it. To have faith in the individual is to affirm the worth and dignity of every person. And at the same time, we affirm that everyone is held by a network of relationships. We are each embedded in the web of creation. We're not separate from creation. We're embedded in the web of creation. For our existence and our enrichment, we depend on other people, other beings, the cosmos, and on a holy mystery that exists beyond our naming. We are dependent on generations of people who came before us and prepared the way. Each of us is responsible for using the freedom we have with mindfulness. Our actions affect the world near to us, and the distant lands and people that we may never see. We have a basic faith in the interdependent individual, everyone with dignity. Everyone, every being connected to the rest of creation. The center of this tradition holds many ways of speaking about lives and the purpose of our lives, about our human nature and the nature of the divine, the mystery in which we live and move and have our being. Our spiritual home is always changing. It changes as we enlarge the circle to embrace those who bring to us unfamiliar words and new ways of seeing, new ways of being religious. This religious tradition of ours is an embracing faith, based on a faith in the interdependent individual. You and me, every person, together as members of the whole human family. So may it be, and so may we live. Blessed be, and amen.